was also no denying that something was seriously wrong with him. There was no damn way he could have faked the level of anxiety and despair I'd seen in him earlier when he begged Dr. Cherish for assistance. The urge to help him kept hammering at me, no matter how hard I tried to focus on the bad things he'd done and would likely still try to do to me. "Drink the rest," I muttered. His gaze skittered to mine, lines of pain deep in his face.
"Have more?"
I hesitated. No damn way I was telling him about my stash. "Not with me," I hedged, "but you can have the rest of this." He remained still for another few seconds, as if running through his options, then lifted the bottle with both hands and drank another few gulps. He recapped it with a couple of inches of brain smoothie still in it and set it beside me.
"Thank you."
Well, that was a whole lot nicer than the fuck you he'd given me down at the boat launch. "What's going on?" I asked. "Why did you come here?" I didn't think it was only to score some brains, even though he'd obviously needed them desperately.
"I shouldn't be here," he said again,
then drew a breath that verged on a sob.
"Angel, it hurts."
A shudder racked him.
"Oh, God."
I put a hand on his arm. "Philip, I can get you help," I said quietly, suppressing a shiver at the stark pain in his voice. "Please, let me."
"No."
He drew in a sharp, noisy breath. "No," he said again, shaking his head.
"I can't. No."
Annoyance at the stoic bullshit flared. "Great. So stay fucked up," I retorted. "You're a goddamn idiot." Philip dropped his chin to his chest, shoulders shaking and breath coming as if weeping silently, though there were no tears. "Damn it," I muttered. Sighing, I slipped an arm around him and pulled his head to my shoulder. "Stupid parasite." It felt right, but what the hell was I doing? To my surprise, he seemed to ease, breathing becoming a bit more regular.
"Shouldn't be here,"
he murmured. "Yeah, yeah, yeah," I said with a roll of my eyes. "You said that already. Now shut up about it." He closed his eyes, tremors easing more. I realized I was stroking his hair, though I didn't remember lifting my hand to do so.
"I'm sorry,"
he muttered after a moment. "For which part?" I wanted to ask. There'd certainly been a lot of bad shit, but he was calm now, and I didn't want him upset and unstable again. "Yeah, well, you owe me a new jacket," I muttered. He lifted his head and looked into my face, eyes nowhere near as confused and pain-clouded as a few minutes earlier.
"I have to go."
"Sure," I said, "but drink the rest of the bottle first." Scrubbing a hand over his face, he shifted to sit fully back against the wall again. He picked up the bottle, looked at the remaining sludgy brown liquid in it.
"When can you get more?"
Was he asking because he wanted me to get him more, or was he concerned that I'd have to go without? I avoided a direct answer. "I'll be okay. My people will take care of me," I said, with the heavy implication that his people obviously didn't. "Drink the rest." He gave a single tight nod, then nearly ripped the cap off before downing the remainder. "Why were you dressed up as an extra for the movie?" I asked. He rubbed at his eyes and set the bottle down.
"Have to stay close to the subjects," he muttered. "Easiest way."
"Subjects of what?" I peered at him, eyes narrowed. He blinked and looked over at me.
"Shit,"
he murmured, as if suddenly realizing he'd said too much. He gave his head a sharp shake.
"Nothing. Forget I said it."
He paused.
"I'm serious. You need to forget it."
Yeah, like that was going to happen. His shoulder was warm against mine, and I didn't want to lose the contact with him, but I also knew damn well that he was super dangerous and working for people who didn't have warm fuzzies for me. Reluctantly, I pulled away from him and stood. "You're better now," I made myself say. "You need to leave." A barely audible moan escaped him as I moved away, but he pushed himself to his feet, gave a slight nod.
"I'm going."
I slapped down the urge to tell him I'd find a way to give him more help. "You owe me,"
I told him instead. I mean it. Don't come back around here. A wave of what sure as hell looked like sadness passed over his face before his expression hardened. He straightened, looked down his nose at me.
I got what I wanted,
he said, then turned and headed off along the wall behind the hedge. Confused, I watched him go, unable to shake the feeling I was missing something obvious. Chapter 21. To my surprise, I managed to get back to sleep without any problem. Maybe my subconscious accepted that if Philip or any of his cronies were going to mess with me, they'd had ample opportunity to do so when I followed him out. Or maybe I was simply tired as all hell. Either way, I slept like the dead until around 8 in the morning, and only woke up then because another goddamn fire truck went by on the street outside. A few more boxes of donated clothing had been brought by, and I managed to snag more stuff for my dad as well as a couple of t-shirts for myself. I even found cargo pants in my size, or rather in a teenage boy size that fit me well enough. After the clothing search, I grabbed a quick shower in the girls' locker room, silently grateful that my parasite would take care of any god-awful foot fungus I caught from the grungy tile floors. My dad was peering at a newspaper when I came back out. "Have you eaten this morning?" I asked him as I dragged a comb through my wet hair. "Yeah, some fancy cinnamon roll thing." "They have eggs and bacon, too," I told him. "You should try and eat some protein." I tugged on shoes and socks. "I'm going to see if I can get a ride into work, and then the phone store to get us new phones. And the DMV, and probably the bank, too," I thought. I needed a new debit card and wanted to deposit the money he'd given me. Holy crap, but there was a lot to do. Good thing most of it was in semi-reasonable walking distance from downtown. Sure, I wanted to find out more about why Philip was pretending to be an extra and who the hell the subjects were he was talking about, but taking care of my dad and me had to take priority right now. "You need anything while I'm gone?" I asked. Dad shook his head, turned the page in his newspaper. "Don't need shit." That's when I saw it. A picture of Marcus at the bottom of the front page under all the stuff about the flood. And a headline that read, "Heroic Rescue Saves Family of Three." I snatched the paper away from my dad. "And when were you planning on telling me about this?" I asked as I hurried to read the brief article.
"About what? That cop?"
"You should have said something," I said with a scowl. He muttered something I decided to ignore while I focused on reading. The article praised Marcus for diving into a flooded drainage canal to save a young family from certain death after their car went off the road shortly after dark. Unfortunately, it continued, the officer sustained a broken leg and had to be transported to the hospital for treatment. I silently cursed the lack of details, but exhaled in relief. A broken leg was nothing but an inconvenience for a zombie. And most importantly, it explained why he hadn't come by last night. I hesitated, then thrust the paper back at my dad, gave him a hug. "It's all going to be okay," I said. "We're still alive, and that's what counts." His eyes lifted to mine.
"That's good, Angelkins. Everything's going to be just fine. You and me."
"Damn straight," I said. "We're too mean to keep down for long."
"When you coming back?"
"I'll probably be a few hours, I figure," I told him. "Hope to be back by noon or so, though." My brow furrowed. "You gonna be okay? I heard someone say they're getting a TV in here to show movies."
"I know how to take care of myself," he said with a scowl. "You go do whatever you gotta do."
I scowled right back at him. But I couldn't help but be perversely glad that his orneriness was returning. It didn't take long to find a volunteer who was more than happy to give me a ride to the coroner's office. Once there, she gave me her number so that I could call when I needed a ride back. It took me a few seconds, and several brain cells, to figure out why the front door of the office was locked. Then I remembered it was a Saturday. Crap. Guess I won't be going to the DMV today. Since my key card was at the bottom of the swamp by now, I used the number pad of the lock to gain entry. My footsteps echoed through the quiet halls as I continued through the main building and into the morgue. I planned on finding a way to get to my storage unit, but if there were any available brains to be had here, I'd be stupid to pass them up.
With all the weirdness going on with Philip and Saberton, I wanted to be tanked. But when I pulled the cooler door open, I stopped in my tracks and stared in shock. Body bags. Had to be over a dozen of them. All three stretchers were full, as were the shelves along the walls. The flood. Oh, my God. These are the people who died in the flood. My dad could have easily ended up in one of those. If I hadn't been able to call Pietro for a rescue, or if I hadn't been home, there was no way he'd have made it out. Goosebumps skimmed over me, and I quickly backed out of the cooler and shut the door. My gaze went to the whiteboard on the wall by the cutting room. Three had already been autopsied. Dr. LeBlanc had probably worked late last night. So far, the only brains I'd refused to consume were children and friends, like when Marianne, Ed's girlfriend, had been murdered. I'd long ago lost my respect for the dead, at least that's what I tried to tell myself, but I still winced with a razor-sharp stab of regret as I went back into the cooler. Found the body of Byrne, Alfred, black male, 78 years old, and feasted on his brain. After I tanked up on both brains and guilt, I fired up the morgue computer and tried to decipher the instructions for applying for disaster aid. After a frustrating half hour, I decided that, for the sake of my own sanity, I needed to get someone to help me out. Since the flood had affected relatively few people, its victims didn't qualify for federal aid, which left only state agencies with their bizarre requirements and confusing instructions. The search for a new trailer didn't go any better. Or rather, I had no trouble finding all sorts of trailers and dealers online, but the prices for anything that wasn't a roach-infested falling-down hovel were hell of a lot more than I'd expected. More than a little demoralized, I headed back into the main building.
Angel?
I looked up to see Durrell step out of the investigator's office. He gave me a relieved smile.
Angel, so good to see you.
I mustered a smile. Hey, big guy.
I'm sorry your area flooded,
he said as he moved toward me, face clouded with concern.
It must really be a mess. I'll be happy to come help with some cleanup on my next day off.
He tilted his head.
Hey, how'd the exam go?
I blinked at him stupidly.
Exam? Cleanup? What was there to clean up?
What exam?
The GED. Wasn't that this morning?
A sick jolt went through me. Oh, my God, I breathed. I totally forgot about that. Durrell cringed.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I guess you weren't able to make it.
Then he flashed a smile.
But I know you'd have aced it.
Yeah, I said, my throat constricting. The goddamn GED. All this time studying, and then I missed the test. One more thing the flood took away from me. I guess so. Behind Durrell, the front door opened, and Nick came through. His eyes went straight to me, and then he walked right past Durrell and gathered me into a hug.
I am so, so sorry,
he murmured, with such utter compassion and genuine sympathy that I did the only thing possible. I fucking burst into tears, and then I couldn't stop. Nick held me and gently rubbed my back while I lost it on his shoulder. All this time, I'd managed to be tough and strong and stoic and all full of positive thinking, and Nick's damn hug completely undid me.
I was so worried,
Nick said, still hugging me. And damn it wasn't creepy or grabby or anything. Simply supportive and comforting.
I just got back from your place.
I sniffled. You mean my empty lot? It's gone. All gone. Behind him, I saw Durrell standing there with an increasingly perplexed expression.
I know. I saw.
He gently released me and pulled back to look into my face.
Wait. Angel.
Durrell said, shock and disbelief heavy in his voice.
Your house? You lost your house? Oh, my God. I didn't know. I thought you only had a foot of water or so.
He shook his head.
I'm an idiot. I'm so sorry.
I wiped at my eyes and nodded. Lost the whole damn thing. We had to climb onto the roof. I tried to smile, but we got a helicopter ride out of it, so that was cool, you know.
Oh, hell,
he said, then moved up to smash me against his chest in his own massive hug. I made an oof sound. Can't breathe, I gasped dramatically. Darrell released me with a gruff snort and shaky smile.
Is your dad all right?
Nick asked, expression serious. He's okay. Small bump on the head, but nothing bad, I told them.
What do you need? He asked. What can we do?
I took a deep breath. I'm not even sure where to begin. I guess I need a copy of my ID from my personnel file so I can get a new phone and a debit card and, hell, new ID, though that'll have to wait till Monday. And I need to go to my storage unit and... Darrell held up a hand, stopping my babble.
You need a ride?
I'd love one, I replied, relieved.
I may be slow on the uptake, Darrell said, but I can at least play chauffeur.
Nick looked as if he wished he'd thought to offer a ride first, but he managed an encouraging smile anyway.
Angel, when you get your new phone, be sure to call and let me know what you need.
I will, I said, moving to him and giving him a hug. Thanks. He gave a little shrug.
No biggie,
he said, trying to be nonchalant and utterly failing. He headed to the investigator's office without another word. Darrell watched him go, slight frown puckering his wide forehead, then turned back to me.
At your service, darling,
he said with a slight bow. I smacked him on the upper arm. Don't make me start quoting Driving Miss Daisy, he chuckled.
You know, if I squint, you look a little bit like Jessica Tandy.
Oh, my God, I laughed. Shut up and help me break into the personnel files. Chapter 22. Once again, I found myself grateful that I lived in a small town. I expected to have to go through all sorts of hassle to get a replacement phone, since the DMV was closed, and my only photo ID was a photocopy of my actual driver's license. But the guy at the phone store remembered me from when I'd been in a few weeks before, and I scored new phones for my dad and me with practically zero hassle. Unfortunately, the brand new phone had barely any charge, and since I actually wanted to use my phone, I ended up buying a car charger as well so that I could give it some quick juice in Darrell's Durango. The bank people were less accommodating and weren't keen to give me a new debit card without something vaguely official. However, they cheerfully accepted my dad's cash for deposit, though I remembered to hold back a couple hundred. Until I had an ID, I wouldn't be able to withdraw once it was officially deposited. The storage unit was my last stop. I worried that Darrell would want to come in with me to help get stuff, which would have been awkward as hell since, well, you know, freezer full of brains. I assured him I wasn't planning on taking anything out since I didn't have any place to put it, so there was nothing to lift or carry, and told him all I wanted to do was look for a scrapbook I thought I'd stored a couple of months ago. I spun a line about how it would ease my mind to know that something personal had survived the flood, and luckily he bought my lie and waited in the car while I went inside. Of course, then I got stupidly bummed out because there wasn't a damn thing in my storage unit but a goddamn freezer full of brains and some pork ribs, which meant that, yeah, everything we'd owned really was gone. Still have brains, at least, I told myself. Could be a hell of a lot worse. I stuffed three bags of frozen brains into each of my side pockets, then instantly regretted the fact that I now had only the thin fabric of my cargo pants between me and frozen brains. Yeah, totally comfortable. I returned to the Durango, gave Darrell a big smile. It was there, I lied.
Awesome, he said with a wide grin.
Grief of loss swept through me again. God damn it, but the next time I got some memorabilia, I was going to make sure it was stored someplace safe. Can you spare a few more minutes? I asked as I unplugged the phone from the car charger. I need to make a phone call now that I have a bit of a charge.
Take your time, Darrell said in his easygoing manner.
I gave him a smile and walked a few steps away from the Durango. I dialed Pietro's number,
once again glad it was so close to my ex-boyfriend's number and therefore easy to remember. He picked up on the second ring.
Angel, I've been waiting to hear from you. How are you? I've been very concerned. I only recently found out that Marcus didn't pick you up from the shelter yesterday.
Hey, Pietro, I said. I've sure as hell been better. It's cool about Marcus. I saw the paper this morning. I shifted the phone to the other ear. I can't thank you enough for sending the helicopter. I don't think my dad would have made it if not for that.
I was more than happy to help,
he replied.
But I'm so very sorry you lost so much.
Thanks, I said, then blew out my breath. About Marcus. Brian told me not to say anything to anyone about the highway fight because of security. Does that include Marcus? We have enough crap between us without keeping something like that from him. After only a second of hesitation, Pietro replied.
That situation is unsettling. Use your discretion and share what you feel you need to.
Okay, great, I said, more relief than I expected washing through me. Look, I also called to tell you that I saw Philip last night. Twice. He fell quiet for a few seconds. I heard a click, and I had the strongest impression that he'd done something to record the call.
What happened?
He finally asked. I told him about following Philip, and what I found in the box under the steps, and about seeing him with Dr. Cherish, and about how she gave him the paper bag with the packets of brains. Then I told him about how Philip came to find me, and how I gave him my last bottle of brains. I don't know why I helped him, I confessed to Pietro. I wasn't quite ready to share my zombie parent compassion theory. I mean, he's been nothing but a complete tool to me, but God, he was so obviously hurting.
Angel, you have no idea how thankful I am that you helped him, he said.
I blinked. You are? I asked, baffled. I don't understand. Isn't he working for Saberton?
Yes, he said, but as an operative for me.
Whoa, I breathed. I fell silent for a few seconds while I wrapped my head around that. Wait, I said, anger flaring. He was working for you this whole time? Even when he attacked me? Why the hell didn't you tell me? I heard him exhale.
Angel, I understand how you feel, he replied, but there was so much at stake, is so much at stake. Everything has been on a need-to-know basis in order to protect Philip and his assignment. If the Saberton men with him ever witnessed anything from you, other than your genuine reaction to him as one of them, he would be compromised, and so would you. However, as he is due to be extracted tomorrow, there's little harm in you knowing now.
Oh, I scowled. I hated the answer, but I also understood it. Damn it. Well, he's in really bad shape, I told him, then narrowed my eyes as another piece of the puzzle clicked into place, and I didn't like the picture that was forming. Hang on, I said. That drop he made? Son of a bitch. If Philip was an operative for Pietro, that had to mean the stuff he left in the box under the steps was meant for Pietro's people. There wouldn't have been any reason for him to be skulking around to pass something to Saberton since he was openly working with them. And good old Dr. Cherish had been there waiting for the stuff. A brand new anger flared. Is Cherish still working for you? I walked a little further away from Durrell. I had a feeling I was going to be raising my voice real soon. He drew a deep breath and released it, and when he spoke, his voice sounded heavy and tired.
I reacquired her a few days after she fled the factory lab incident with you, he told me. She is contained and works under Ariston's supervision. He paused. He needs her.
Contained, I spat the word. Well, no one contained her when she was a vicious cold bitch to Philip. He begged for brains, and she jumped his ass for not rationing properly. Then she only gave him two packets when he obviously needed a lot more. The plastic of my phone creaked, and I forced myself to relax my grip before I broke it.
She and Dr. Nikas were temporarily at the Tucker Point lab location to monitor the data and samples from Saberton zombie research that Philip left at the drop site, Pietro told me. However, Ariston had to return to the main lab the night of your fight with the Saberton men out on Highway 1790. Heather needed medical attention, and he wanted to preserve the brain remnants for future use from the zombie she killed. His voice was a bit too calm and even, and I had a strong feeling he was more than a little pissed off himself. But whether it was because Philip had been wronged or because the oh-so-secret mission had been jeopardized, I couldn't tell. Great. So he needs help from y'all and gets treated like dirt, I said, scowling. Philip has other means of signaling that he needs assistance, Pietro told me. The lab itself was never a contact point, and he wouldn't have gone there if he'd been thinking clearly.
He sounded oddly weary.
Ariston failed to foresee an interaction between Philip and Cherish, and so hadn't left any instructions. Cherish knew him only as a Saberton informant working on the movie set.
My scowl deepened. Well, y'all need to do something for him now. He's hurting bad and twitchy.
Considering the current circumstances, I'll get word to him that we're going to move his extraction up for later today. He said he did get stabilizer.
Oh, the stuff that keeps him from shaking?
Right. That's Ariston's formulation to ease the pain somewhat and keep Philip functional.
Yeah, he had two vials, one kind of yellow and the other a milky blue. He drank half of one when he was with me. I wanted to get pissed off again at the reminder of how Cherish had fucked Philip up, but it was getting a bit tiring being so mad all the time. I thought I heard a low intake of breath.
Angel, are you certain one was a milky blue?
Totally.
And which one did he drink from last night?
The tension in his voice was palpable. The yellow? I frowned. Why?
All right. There still might be time,
he said, almost as if to himself. Pietro, what's going on?
The yellow vial is most likely stabilizer, he said. The color varies with the batches as the formulation is improved. It's the milky blue one that concerns me, since that's the color of the parasite stimulant that Ariston sometimes uses for testing. I'm no doctor, but I don't think it would react well with Philip's already unstable parasite.
Fucking hell. Had Cherish given him the wrong thing on purpose? I knew in my bones that Dr. Nikas hadn't messed up the vials.
It could simply be a coincidence, but I'm giving orders for his immediate extraction. He continued, thank you for calling me, Angel. This has been very helpful.
And with that, he hung up. I stared down at the phone while I muttered a few nasty words, then headed back to the Durango.
Where to now? Darrell asked. Back to the high school?
I nodded. My dad's probably wondering what's taken me so long. It was a few miles, longer than I would have wanted to walk, but only a couple of minutes to drive. You can let me out by the gym door, I said as we got close.
Sure thing.
He glanced my way as he pulled to a stop.
Look, you guys are welcome to come stay at my place tonight if you want. It's not big, but maybe better than here.
I cocked an eyebrow at him. I don't know. Do you have roving bands of roaches patrolling the halls? I'm kind of used to those by now. His face twisted into a mock grimace.
Unfortunately, I can't offer roach guards, but I do have a disdainful cat. Will that work?
Thanks, partner. I'll ask my dad what he wants to do, I said with a grateful smile. I have your number if we decide to take you up on it.
You're welcome, Angel,
he said.
Give me a call later, or you'll get more texts than you know what to do with.
I will, I promised, laughing. I leaned over and gave him a hug, then slipped out of the car and headed inside. There was no sign of my dad in the gym, and the plastic bag with his clothes and jacket was gone. My heart hammered as I jumped to the worst conclusion, kidnapped by Saberton. Alarm rose as I swept my gaze around the room again, as if doing so would magically reveal that he'd been hiding. I took a breath and tried to convince myself that, with my dad, it could just as easily be that he left on his own through sheer bullheadedness. The tool-stealing teenage refugee was flaked out on the floor in front of the TV.
Hey, do you know where my dad is? I asked.
His eyes flicked to me and then right back to the screen.
He left with someone.
My scowl deepened at the lack of useful information, and I moved between him and the TV.
What kind of someone?
I snarled. He jerked his gaze up to mine, an outraged response on his lips, but it died when his eyes met mine. I was fairly well tanked up, and oh so very much not in the mood for bullshit, especially when it came to my dad. His throat bobbed as he gulped.
A man? About 30, I think. Short dark hair on crutches, your dad knew him.
Marcus. I bet he loved faking an injury. The tension drained out of me.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
Okay, so the thought of my dad and Marcus having guy time together wasn't exactly comforting, but it was better than the other theories I'd concocted. I yanked my phone from my pocket to call Marcus, then scowled at the flashing battery symbol. Crap. Obviously, 5 minutes on the car charger wasn't worth a whole lot.
Angel?
I spun to see the woman who'd given me the ride to the coroner's office striding toward me.
Your boyfriend was just here,
she announced with a smile, and I had to bite down on the automatic denial that Marcus was my boyfriend.
I told him I didn't know when you'd be back,
she continued, but he wanted to go ahead and get your dad settled. He left a note for you. She thrust a folded piece of paper at me.
Thanks,
I said, taking it. She gave me another bright smile and then hurried off. I unfolded the paper and read, Angel, your dad's safe with me. Please call when you get this note. You can both stay at my place as long as you want, Marcus. I peered at a stray mark before his name. It looked as if he'd started to write an L and thought better of it.
Love?
Exhaling, I refolded the paper and stuffed it into a pocket. Stay with Marcus. It wasn't an ideal solution, especially considering our last conversation, but it was a lot better than remaining in the shelter. And I liked Darrell too much to inflict my dad's permanent company upon him. My mouth twitched in wry amusement. At least Marcus was already used to the ornery bastard. As concern for my dad evaporated, worry for Philip flooded in. Now that I had a clue as to his real situation, I wanted to see for myself that Pietro's people got him out okay, and if they hadn't yet, to get some brains to him. I could call Marcus as soon as I did so. Pietro had said Philip was working on the movie, so now I just needed to figure out how to sneak into where they were filming. Hurrying to the door, I almost ran smack into Jane Pennington as she came in, and it was only a quick maneuver by one of her staffers that kept us from all falling in a heap.
Angel.
Her eyes widened in surprise as she recovered her balance and steadied herself on her cane.
I didn't know you were here,
she said, genuine concern in her voice.
Pietro told me he got you out, so I thought you'd be somewhere besides in the shelter.
Brow furrowed, she swept her gaze around the gym with its cots and motley inhabitants. I winced.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy, I said. We spent last night here, but I think we're going to be staying with Marcus, for a couple of days at least. I could unpack my feelings about all that later.
I hope everything works out, she said. I'm so sorry for your losses.
She looked like she was going to say more, but one of her aides, a middle-aged man with sharp features and a serious expression, touched her arm.
I'm sorry, Jane, he said, but they're about to start filming the crowd scene. We can come back here to speak to the refugees afterward.
Indecision swept over her face. It was clear she cared deeply about my situation, but it was also obvious that she really wanted to see the movie zombies. It was such a totally human and awesome and non-congresswomanly display that I had to choke back a laugh, and I sure as hell liked her even more for it.
Hey, is it okay if I tag along?
I said, making the decision moot for her. Besides, this would get me behind the barricades, so I could make sure Philip was being taken care of. And if Pietro's people hadn't yet reached him, I had two chunks of frostbite on my thighs, or rather two pockets full of thawing brains, that might be of use. Jane grinned.
Absolutely.
We left the gym and headed toward the barricades across the gaps in the chain-link fence surrounding the football field.
Beyond them, the movie crew positioned lighting and numerous cameras while a whole horde of zombies chilled out, waiting for the start of the filming. As I'd hoped, I had no trouble getting onto the set by following in Jane's wake. No questions asked. The extras clustered around Jane in a strange meet-and-greet zombie fest. At first I wondered why they were so enthusiastic. Then I remembered she'd been instrumental in assuring that laid-off factory workers were given the jobs. The unaffected grin on her face told me she was in utter heaven as she peered at makeup and laughed at outrageous shambling. I sure as hell hoped Pietro was dating her because he actually liked her and not for some ulterior purpose. The pace of activity increased as the crew members readied for filming. Makeup people touched up zombie rot and prosthetic gore. And other crews circulated through the crowd with water bottles and some of the white-wrapped bars. Apparently shambling was hard work, I thought with amusement. A sudden shiver of unease ran through me for no reason that I could name, even as an odd noise like soft moaning rippled through the crowd of extras. Mildly weirded out, I surreptitiously palmed a handful of brains from a baggie in my side pocket and got it into my mouth without anyone seeing. At least I hope not. The something's wrong feeling increased as I scanned the area. Though filming hadn't started, extras began to stagger or flail their arms or sway in place. Definitely not normal. I downed another handful of brains as I slipped through the crowd, again glad that I was skinny enough to do so with ease. However, I was less than thrilled by my lack of height since I couldn't see a damn thing. I went still and lifted my head, scenting the air and not caring how strange it looked. Hell, I was surrounded by a bunch of people pretending to be undead. I was the normal one in this crowd. Yet my sniffing only confused me more. I caught hints of the distinctive zombie rot odor, but it came from multiple sources. Not good. Another weird ripple of unease passed through me, once again accompanied by a bizarre shift in the behavior of the extras. Unnerving groans came from all around me, and a fake zombie nearby staggered and sank to the ground, hands clawing at her face and throat. My frown deepened as the latex peeled away, revealing a square stick-on patch on the side of her neck, surrounded by faintly gray skin that didn't look made up. Baffled, I swung my gaze around, caught a glimpse of one of the makeup people holding a cardboard box in her hand with what looked like more of the strange patches in it along with some of the snack bars that had been handed out earlier. I steadied my gaze on the makeup artist, and my heart skipped a beat. It was the petite black woman who'd stolen my blood at the boat launch. A makeup artist who draws blood? Realization slammed in. The subjects. Philip was undercover with Saberton, and he'd said he needed to stay close to the subjects. I stared around in shock and no small amount of horror as bits and pieces began to fall into place. The extras were being used as test subjects by the Saberton Corporation. And now, bits of the conversation with Dr. Nikas lit up. Fake brains are the holy grail. Dangerous to test them on zombies, since it risks changing the parasite, like what ruined Philip. A way to make temporary zombies. Oh my God. The stick-on patches, the two real-looking gray skin, the snack bars, some sort of research patch on a temporary zombie being fed fake brains? It made a horrible and sick sense. Saberton was temporarily zombifying the extras in order to test fake brains on them. No one would blink twice at zombie extras actually looking a little like zombies for a while. Righteous anger flared, not only at the Saberton associates, but at Pietro's team as well. Instead of putting a stop to it and trying to protect these people, they'd had Philip remain undercover so that he could steal whatever findings Saberton came up with and pass them over to Dr. Nikas to use in his own research. People didn't matter. My gut tightened. Brenda Barnes, the cardiomyopathy victim, most likely died from this testing. The adhesive on her neck, it fit.
An extra staggered in circles nearby, confusion in his eyes turning sharp and feral. Something was going wrong with the temporary zombies, causing bizarre actions and actual zombie-like behavior. Then I felt it. With no obvious cause, a weird twitchy unease touched with hunger permeated me. Philip. Call it a zombie mama's intuition, but I had a bad feeling Philip was the source of the problem with the extras. He was somewhere in this crowd, going nuts and throwing off some sort of weird feeding frenzy pheromone. Damn. Turning, I pushed through the crowd of the temp zombies around Jane. Elbowed one sharply out of the way as it reached for her. Jane, you need to get out of here. Her brow furrowed as she looked around for some obvious source of danger. What? Why? Crap. She probably thought the extras were still simply being in character, giving her a little demo. Yeah, well, she's gonna get one hell of a demo if she doesn't get out of here. But what the hell was I supposed to tell her? There's a labor dispute, and I think there's about to be a riot, I blurted, then fought back a cringe. Holy crap. But that was without a doubt the dumbest thing I'd ever said. Look, you need to get off the set, I insisted. A small frown of doubt touched her mouth as she took in the increasingly erratic behavior of the extras. Yes, I suppose you're right. I shot a look to her aid. Get her out of here, or I'll tell Pietro you didn't get her out of here. Too late, I realized the threat was pointless if he didn't know how much power Pietro held. Fortunately, he at least seemed to understand that the crowd was growing unruly for no discernible reason. He nodded and slipped an arm around Jane's waist on the opposite side from her cane. I've got her, he told me, then looked to Jane. Let's get you to the car, Dr. Pennington. He shepherded her toward the barricades, and I stayed long enough to make absolutely sure she was really getting out of the crowd before I turned back to the mess. Crew members and staff sought to regain order, but were losing the battle as the bizarre rowdiness increased. Distantly, I heard someone yell to get the cameras running. What the hell? I thought in outrage, though a sensible part of me totally understood that any director worth a shit would want to film a crowd of zombies going nuts. Besides, the director probably had no idea what the real deal was. I fought my way free from the thick of the crowd, continuing to scan and scent. My gaze passed over a black-haired woman, then went right back to her. She stood tall, scanning the crowd, and didn't seem at all disturbed by the craziness around her. I shoved a stumbling extra out of my way as I got closer to her. Heather? I asked in disbelief as I peered at her, noting on closer inspection that she was wearing a dark wig over her blonde hair. Her attention rested on me, and a smile touched her mouth. Hey, Angel, she murmured, then went back to scanning the crowd. I'm in with Mr. Ivanov. Can't thank you enough. She looked calm and oh so very ready for action. That's awesome, I said. I figured her minimal disguise was to help keep her off the Saberton radar. You're looking for Philip, too? I mentally prayed for her to tell me they'd already found and extracted him, but she merely gave a sharp nod. Yep. Me and Kyle, my trainer, were nearby when the call came in. She told me. Others are on their way. Crap. Philip hadn't been extracted yet. Adding confirmation to my gut feeling that he was the source of the problem with the berserk extras. I felt his influence, a growing unnatural hunger accompanied by waves of unease, like insects crawling in my skull and sending twitches through my muscles. Unlike the poor extras who didn't have a clue what they were experiencing, I didn't have much trouble controlling the compulsion to feed, especially since I was fairly tanked. Yet along with the undesirable urge came something else. A strong sense of Philip, as though I knew where he was without knowing. I lifted my head and scented the air again. There, to my left. I slipped through the increasingly wild crowd, surrounded by shouts and cries that were far too realistic to be part of a movie. A fake zombie reached for me, confusion and anger warring it out on his makeup-covered features. I dodged the grab, only to be forced to spin away from another who lunged toward me, lips pulled back from rotted teeth. For an instant, I wondered if that was makeup, or if the extra actually had poor oral hygiene. The latter, I decided, as the few teeth in his head snapped together on nothing.
Bearing my own, far better, teeth, I shoved the fake zombie back and continued moving toward where my newfound intuitive radar told me Philip was. Another zombie let out a gurgling moan, and a heavier waft of rot hit me like a fist. Shit. This wasn't one of the extras. This was Tim Bell of the broken nose, and he looked bad. Eyes wild and desperate, and flesh shredding for real from his clawed hands. A young woman with only light zombie makeup stood beside him, eyes wide in confusion, but not acting erratically. Maybe not a test subject? Tim let out a rasping snarl, then grabbed the woman's arm in a hard grip. She let out a shocked wail of pain, confusion shifting to a perfectly understandable fear. I could easily smell her brains, which meant it had to be driving Tim absolutely bonkers. "Heather!" I yelled, hoping the woman was within earshot, even as I kicked Tim's knee as hard as I could. He staggered and let out a bellow, but to my relief, he released the young woman. Snarling, he turned on me, a scary, dangerous expression coming over his face. In my peripheral vision, I saw other extras grow more agitated as he focused his fury on me. Great. Goddamn pheromones all over the damn place. The young woman fled through the crowd, but in her place, Heather appeared. Her sharp gaze took in the situation, and no doubt noted that this particular zombie was way different from the other misbehaving extras. "What you got?" she asked calmly. Her eyes never left Tim as she pulled out a collapsible police baton and snapped it open. "He's a real one," I told her quickly. "Philip made him, and he's all messed up." Tim was obviously hungry, and though I had pockets full of thawing brains, I wasn't about to waste them on this motherfucker unless absolutely necessary. "The other one Philip made might be somewhere in here, too." Crap. And Philip. Like a nest of pissed-off snakes in my belly, I sensed him escalating out of control. "All right," she said, brandishing the baton. "We're supposed to get those two as well as Philip." I took a step back as she squared off against the very pissed-off Tim. "I need to find Philip," I said, feeling the urgency of it rise with every passing second. "You got this one?" "Yep," she replied with an adrenaline-charged smile. "I got this." I gave her one last dubious look, then continued to weave through the seething crowd. More extras grabbed at me, but thankfully they only seemed to have a touch of the full zombie strength and speed, so a few well-placed kicks and elbows got me past them. I shoved an extra dressed as a rotting cheerleader out of the way, then breathed a curse as I caught sight of Roland, the other Philip-made real zombie. He didn't have any makeup on, and he didn't need it. His head swiveled from side to side, lips curled back and teeth snapping together repeatedly. Saliva strung from the corner of his mouth, and his eyes shone with madness. With a roar, he charged one of the camera crew who was trying vainly to restore some order in his little corner of the fiasco. I sucked in a breath. I knew there was no way I'd be able to intervene in time to save the crew member. Yet before Roland could close the distance, a stocky man wearing a shirt lettered "Security" lifted a gun and fired with a familiar whoosh sound. A trank gun. A yellow tuft bloomed on Roland's chest. He took two more steps and then crumpled onto his face. The man with the trank gun lowered it, and I got another start of surprise. This was the asshole who'd stepped on my hand out of the boat launch. Turning, I quickly lost myself in the crowd. I didn't want to get tranked myself, and I was more than happy to leave him to deal with the neutralized Roland. My zombie mama heart lurched, and I froze as an inhuman, snarling bellow cut through the crowd noise. I ducked past another cluster of people and around the corner of the building that housed the concession stand just in time to see Philip take a Saberton security man by the head and smash it into the cinder block wall. Well, shit, I thought. This is bad. Chapter 23. As the body fell, Philip dropped into a crouch, tore the man's skull apart, and began to stuff chunks of brain into his mouth. His entire body jerked every few seconds as though jolted by electricity, and his dead gray face was plenty horrifying without any movie makeup. He screamed in anguish through a gory mouthful, spattering the pavement with blood and brain bits. Really, really,
bad.
Philip? I yelled. Philip, it's me, Angel. His hands curled like claws as his eyes snapped to mine, and to my dismay, I saw nothing of Philip in them. Hell, he barely looked human. I felt my own lips pull back in an answering snarl. How the hell was I supposed to help him? Or stop him?
Angel, I have your back, said a calm male voice from behind me. I'm Kyle Griffin, and Mr. Ivanov sent me.
Kyle, Heather's trainer. Gotcha, I said without pulling my attention from Philip to glance back. I moved forward, then paused as Philip stood, breathing heavily, gore dripping from his hands and mouth. He tilted his head back and let out an eerie wail that slid through me like a blade of ice. The hair on my arm stood on end as the zombie extras echoed the cry in poor, though equally disturbing, imitation. If I'd had any doubt that the temp zombies were reacting to Philip, it was gone in that moment. Hopefully that meant if I could calm Philip, the rest of the commotion would settle down before anyone else got seriously hurt or worse. Yeah, no problem. I drew a deep breath and let it out, fixing my gaze on Philip as I shifted closer to him.
Easy there, big guy, I murmured.
Philip let out an animal cry of torment, arching his back and clenching his fists, and sending the extras into an unnerving, wailing frenzy. A tremor racked him, and he swung his head toward the source of the cries, a new fever lighting his eyes.
Oh, hell, this is not good.
Movement caught my eye. I flicked my gaze away from Philip barely long enough to see the asshole Saberton dude who'd tranked Roland come around the corner of the building a few yards beyond Philip. His face set in determination, he gripped the trank gun in his right hand. Crap. I snapped my focus back to Philip and closed half the distance between us, while somewhere on the sidelines a sensible part of me wondered what the hell I was doing. Hey, Philip, I called out, trusting that Kyle would take care of Saberton dude while I distracted Philip from the masses. As though on cue, a tall and lanky black man strode from behind me toward Saberton dude, everything in his attitude and posture announcing that he was going to take this company man out of action, and there wasn't a damn thing anyone could do to stop him. Kyle, dangerous as fuck.
Stay back, asshole,
Saberton dude ordered Kyle, raising the trank gun. Kyle kept moving, apparently not giving a shit about the trank gun. The man fired and scored a hit in the shoulder, but Kyle didn't even slow. Well, not for two steps anyway. Then he stopped and stared down at the dart in his shoulder with an expression of shock and disbelief. It sure looked like he'd expected to have some resistance to the trank. Realization hit me. The new trank. The same stuff that knocked me out the other night rather than simply paralyzing me. I couldn't help wondering how the hell Kyle could have a resistance to normal tranks, but now wasn't the time to explore that little mystery. Kyle crumpled to the ground, still looking surprised and more than a little annoyed. A smirk of satisfaction crossed Saberton dude's face, but it quickly shifted to a wide-eyed, holy crap face as Philip screamed and turned toward him, blood from the dead Saberton man still wet on his face. He swung the gun around to point at Philip, fired, and struck him low on his left side. Oh, hell no. My zombie mama bitch protective instinct flared hot and bright. With a snarl, I ran and dove at the asshole. Saberton dude's eyes widened as he caught sight of me, and he tried to backpedal into a position to fend off Philip and level the trank gun in my direction, but I slammed into him while he was still off balance, all 98 or so pounds of me, driving him back over an equipment rack to land heavily on top of him. Philip gave another tortured scream that slashed through my senses like a tumble of razor blades. Again, the extras picked it up and echoed it. With a harsh growl, I ripped the gun out of Saberton dude's hand. You don't touch him, I yelled. He seemed surprised by my strength. Maybe he hadn't dealt with female zombies before, but he recovered quickly.
Get off me, you crazy bitch.
I'm not crazy, I snarled, baring my teeth.
I drew my hand back and punched him hard, backing it with plenty of zombie strength. His jaw broke with an extremely satisfying crunch, followed by his gurgle of pain.
Grinning with far too much satisfaction, I pushed up off him, then stomped hard on his hand. Okay, maybe a little crazy, I muttered, and payback is definitely a bitch. I turned away as Heather ran up, baton in her right hand dripping with what sure as hell looked like blood. For a second, I almost felt sorry for Tim. Nah, not even a second. Her eyes flicked around, taking it all in. The dead guy with his head smashed open, Saberton dude down and moaning, Kyle down and very still, and Philip with a dart protruding from his side, most certainly not down, looking even more pissed off and crazy, and now moving toward the extras. Here, I said, and tossed her the trank gun. But don't shoot Philip with it, it'll make him worse. I didn't wait for a reply. I yanked a bag from my pocket and gulped down some more brains, then ran after Philip and literally shoved the half-full bag into his face. He gave a weird hissing sound, grabbed the bag in hands still crooked like claws. He sucked the contents down and let the empty bag fall, but to my dismay, the animal-crazed look still filled his eyes. He lurched toward the extras again and let out another scream cry. New fervor erupted in the crowd, and screams of non-zombies made my blood run cold. This was turning into total mayhem, and I knew I needed to do something to stop it, but what? My instinct shrieked at me to move, to act, now. Great, sure, I snarled at it. Tell me what to do, and I will. Philip made a lunge toward the cheerleader zombie, but I grabbed at his arm and used as much zombie strength as I could to swing him toward me. Eyes wild, he raised a hand to strike me, tension in every fiber of his body. Yet to my surprise, and deep relief, he held the strike, face contorted and body quivering as though fighting with himself. With an animal snarl of my own, I seized his shoulders, leaped up to wrap my arms and legs around him, and then sank my teeth into the big muscle at the junction of his neck and shoulder. That, my instinct crooned, do that. My breath hissed around my teeth as I latched onto him like a tick on a hound dog. I had no urge to tear or maul like when I'd turned him into a zombie, just bite and hold. That was all. Philip staggered back and made a strangled noise, but made no attempt to throw me off, though it would have been easy enough for him to do, strong as he was. He shook like a dog shedding water, and I bit harder. I heard a low growl and was surprised to realize I was the one making it. Philip sank slowly to his knees, breath coming in low, shuddering gasps. I kept my arms and legs wrapped tightly around him and teeth clamped down hard while I watched the movement around us. Brian approached with a trank gun in one hand and a regular gun in the other. He hesitated, indecision in his eyes as he took in what I was doing to Philip. Apparently, this wasn't any sort of normal operating procedure when trying to subdue a crazed zombie. It was working, though, no denying that. And Brian obviously came to the same conclusion, for in the next breath, he turned away and began issuing quiet orders to the two people behind him, Rachel and Dan, the two zombies who'd cleaned up the mess after the highway fight with Heather. The wails and cries of the fake zombies ceased, leaving a backdrop of shouts, crying, and general standard uproar from the normals. In my peripheral vision, I saw the poor extras milling slowly about in confusion or sinking to sit or sprawl on the ground. Some frantically pulled at their prosthetic makeup, while others spewed their lunch. Philip continued to calm in my bite hold, though he still breathed in short, shuddering breaths.
Heather, situation,
Brian snapped, eyes returning to Philip and me. Trank gun pointed in our general direction. My eyes went to the gun. A low, throbbing growl came from my throat as I snarled at Brian around the bite. He blinked and lowered the gun, questions still crowding thick and close behind his eyes.
Kyle got tranked, Heather said from somewhere behind me. One target zombie down, tranked, the other down and injured.
A touch of satisfaction tinged her voice. Roland was the first one, tranked by Saberton dude, but the other was Tim. I had no doubt she'd found a way to break him enough that he couldn't get up and cause trouble.
Got a dead Saberton man there, and another down with broken face and hand, and the extras are still a bit crazy, but more coherent now, she added.
Brian gave a sharp nod.
Good. Keep the Saberton man down until we're ready to withdraw, he said, then paused as though considering. And make sure he gets a good look at you.
Now that was interesting. Brian obviously wanted Heather's brother to know